بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. والصافات صفا فالزاجرات زجرا فالتاليات ذكرا إن إلهكم لواحد. An oath is generally taken to impress upon the listener that what I'm saying is absolutely true. When Allah Ta'ala takes an oath, He doesn't need to impress. مَنْ أَصْدَقُ مِنَ اللَّهِ حَدِيثًا. There can't be anybody as true as Allah Ta'ala. So there's no need for Him to impress. And everything is subject to Him. It's His servant, it is His slave. And there isn't anything that is above Him. So He doesn't need to impress. When we speak, then we need to impress upon people about our might, our glory, our power, etc. And Allah Pak doesn't need that. When He speaks, out of His kindness, His magnanimity, and His compassion, He speaks to us at our level. And when He speaks to us at our level, we can understand Him. Like an intelligent father, he knows his child is at the pre-primary or the primary level. And when he's going to explain a concept to him, he will not explain it at his level. He will come right to the level of the child and then explain to him. He's got apples now, and he wants to teach him mathematics. He says, see this one apple, and there's another apple, now put it together, how many apples will it become? So this is on account of the compassion, the love, and the kindness of the father, that he comes to the level of the child to explain and make him understand a concept. So Allah Ta'ala also speaks to us with that level of kindness that is beyond comprehension, beyond our imagination, the love that he's got. Sometimes he will impress by taking an oath. Sometimes he will impress by calling a witness or witnessing himself. شَهِدَ اللَّهُ أَنَّهُ لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّهُ وَالْمَلَائِكَةُ وَأُولُو الْعِلْمِ قَائِمًا بِالْقِسْطِ. Allah Ta'ala bears testimony that there is no one worthy of worship but He. And the Malaika also bear witness and testimony to this fact. And then, in oaths, we are commanded that we don't take an oath on the name of any creation. Right? Because when you're taking an oath, as though you are saying, see, if you don't believe me, then I'm calling this person as a witness to the truth what I'm saying. If you don't believe in me, then this is the person that I'm holding in respect. I call him as witness to stand as witness to the truth that I am saying. So therefore we are asked that we don't take an oath in the name of anybody besides Allah Ta'ala. Because the creation is too insignificant. And sometimes when we're taking an oath, then we are attaching a lot of significance, a lot of importance. And the importance then will reach up to the level of divinity. So this type of avenues that could lead a person to shirk, Allah Ta'ala has sealed it off. Any avenue that could eventually lead you to shirk and to polytheism, Allah Ta'ala has sealed it off, blocked it off. And this is something unique in the way of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, that those avenues that could ultimately reach towards shirk, Allah has blocked all those avenues. See, for example, look at idolatry, right? And idolatry, we know it's disbelief, right? But anything that will lead to idolatry will also be regarded as disbelief, impermissible, haram. So if idolatry is impermissible, then to show respect to an idol will also be impermissible. To carve and make up an image of an idol will also be impermissible and haram. To be in that business will also be haram. To transport this stuff also will be haram. Right? Or to keep an image of a person, of an idol in your home, even though it is just for remembrance or remnants, etc., all is haram, forbidden. Can't do it. Person can very well say that I'm not worshipping this. I don't have that belief. But doesn't it ultimately reach to idolatry? It reaches to idolatry. It will lead you to idolatry. So this has been blocked off, impermissible, ruled off as haram. So everything that will eventually lead to idolatry will be regarded as impermissible and haram, no matter what the intention of the person may be. So we will say then to prostrate before a grave will also be impermissible because it will lead you to the same thing, worshipping someone besides Allah Ta'ala. And then to keep an image of an animate thing also will become haram because this is how this whole idolatry had started off. It started off in this manner, that initially when a person, when a pious person passed away, pre-Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam's time, so people thought of the person, and the thought of the good person motivated them. And this person was like this, they spoke about him, and speaking about the good person will enhance your spirit. So then they thought of another idea that, you know, to enhance the spirit, it will be good not only to speak about him, but to keep him or keep his image at the place of our worship. That when we see him, we'll be reminded about his worship, his dedication, how devout he was, how dedicated he was, how committed he was. That is by keeping a picture of the person. So that was the second level. And the second level also wasn't to the level of worshipping. But then when they progressed, then the coming generation felt, well, you know, our elders, they kept the images of these things in their prayer places. So this is the actual thing that we're supposed to be worshipping. So from one point to the other, one thing to the other, eventually it led to idolatry. Now, I explained that Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam is the Khatamun Nabiyyin. He is the seal of all prophethood. Right? There is no prophet to come after him. So he needed to stop these things and nip it in the bud, complete, eliminate it. Whatever could be the cause eventually to that, he had to nip it in the bud. You know, all pictures of animate objects is haram. Finish. Close the topic. Any animate object, taking the picture of it for any reason is impermissible, haram. One is where you are forced because of some legal requirements, identification, etc. That's a different thing. Allah Ta'ala will forgive. Though we will not say that it is permissible to do it, but we will say that because of the circumstance, inshallah, we hope that Allah Ta'ala will forgive us. Because there is no other option. For identification purposes, we have to do it. It's a legal requirement. Right? Though we don't wish to do it, but now how else do they process their data, and their information, how are they going to process it? They need some things for identification purposes, so we will let that happen. Right? But we will not say it's permissible. Therefore, we will do it with the feeling of guilt. We will do it if we need to do it with istighfar. That I need to take a photograph of myself. So I will do it, but I will do it with istighfar. I'll feel the remorse in myself. That I'm showing that I don't identify with these people and with their protocols, with their processes. I don't identify. I identify with Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Nabi Sallam has said that this is not right. I don't identify with these people, I identify with him. But now, if I need to go for Hajj or for Umrah or for whatever the reason, for dini purposes, I can't go without these things here. So I don't identify with a remorseful heart, I'm doing it, therefore I'm making istighfar. If you're not going to be doing it with a remorseful heart, what's going to happen? Then you want to see how smart you look in the photograph. What type of clothing you're wearing, what type of topi, what's the hairstyle like, how the beard is combed. So that means you're showing an importance to that photo. And we say don't show importance to it. So as far as we are concerned, then we are not allowed to take an oath in the name of anything else. But as far as Allah Ta'ala, then there's nothing above him. When there's nothing above him, and he would take an oath on the creation, because there's nothing above him. But in the meanwhile, he needs to impress upon you. And he will impress upon you by taking an oath, or by witnessing something. He says, I am a witness to this. Right? So when he's going to take an oath on something, then it's going to be obviously some creation. Sometimes he'll say, Wattini was Zaytun, right? Sometimes he will say, Wal Adiyati Dabhan. Sometimes he will say, Wal Asr. So he will take these oaths. Why will he take these oaths? Sometimes it is because of the abundance of its benefit. Like you look at Wattini was Zaytun, and the figs and the olive, right? Then the abundance of its benefit, amongst the best of fruit, is the olive. And the fig, but the best, most beneficial. Sometimes you will take an oath of something because of its auspicious nature, وَالتُّور وَكِتَابٍ مَسْتُورٍ. Sometimes there is a relation between the oath and the subject that Allah Pak is discussing. Is a relationship. If you look into the oath and the subject that Allah Pak is discussing, you will understand that there is a very close relationship. For you to understand and appreciate, then you'll have to see the relationship between the oath and the subject that Allah Ta'ala is discussing. For example, he says, Wal asr innal insana lafi khusr. By the token of time, mankind is at a loss. By the token of time, mankind is at a loss. Now to understand the beauty of this oath, you need to understand the relationship between the oath and the subject that he's talking about. Now, the relationship is very simple. And the relationship is that mankind is a winner as long as he appreciates time. He appreciates time, he's a winner. Anything that you're doing, any endeavor, worldly or dini, any type of work that you are doing, but you appreciate time, you value time, you respect time, then you are a winner. A student that is in madrasa, he appreciates his time, he's a winner. A man that comes to your business, he appreciates the time, the moment that he is there, he is fully alert, he is active and he's alert, then you appreciate that he's coming on time, he's alert, he's active, you appreciate the person. But if that person is not showing respect to your time, he's not alert in your time, he's asleep, right? Then obviously it will bring about some type of ill feeling in your heart. Okay, what's wrong? It's my time, my business, my money. And this person is not showing any type of interest in my business, in my time. He's doing other things. So you lose that respect for the person. You lose the love for the person. You lose the respect for the person. What was the reason? He's not showing appreciation to your time. So the time, as though the time is the threshold. The time is the criteria. He respects that criteria, then you respect him. In the akhirat as well, man that respects time, then he's a winner, he's gaining. That person that died just now, a second ago he passed away, if you ask him what is his heart's desire, if you ask the person that died just now, 1 second ago he passed away, so you ask him now, what's your heart desire? What do you wish for? What do you long for? Then he would say to you, Lawla akhartani ila ajalin qareeb. Lawla akhartani ila ajalin qareeb. Allah Ta'ala, you just spare me for a few more moments, Fa'asaddaqa wa akum min as-salih. I'll do all the good works. I'll make namaz, zikr, tawbah. I'll give khairat and charity. I'll do everything. So that person that is at the last, right, that's going to come out from his tongue is going to be right. It's not a proof that whatever he says at the last moment is the right, but it generally would be the right if he's genuinely concerned and he's got a fikr. Genuinely, it'll be right. In the day of the English, there was a judicial, you see, and at the judicial, the person that was convicted for the murder, so he says that this person was an accomplice. He was also an accomplice to this murder. So the court ruled because the dying person cannot speak a lie, he doesn't speak a lie, so therefore what he's saying is true. And because it is a dying person that is saying it, therefore it's true. So therefore this person that he says was an accomplice, then he must also be killed. Like he's going to be hanged, then he's going to be also hanged. So someone challenged the court. The Mu'tamid Sa'd ibn Umar, he challenged the court on that occasion. And he says, your judgment is incorrect. With all due respects, your decision, the judgment that you have taken is not right. Because if you're going by the murid that the dying person doesn't speak a lie, ask him, was he an accomplice to that murder? If he says no, then you're saying he's on the death row. When he's on the death row and he said no, I didn't do it, then you must accept him then. Otherwise it goes against your own principle. It goes against your own principle. That is why they say, by you want to open up your mind, you have to look at kitabs. And the person that looks at kitabs, his mind opens out. Allah opens him. And he can see things in a better perspective. He understands things better. Otherwise, all you will think of is how to double that money. And you will say that person is brilliant. Why? He can double it. He can multiply it. He can multiply it. So when he can multiply it, so he's intelligent. So you see the relationship between the oath and the subject matter. The oath and the subject matter. What a close relationship. That person that is dead, just now a second, ask him. When you saw everything coming to an abrupt end, everything is sealed off. Kitabs have ended off. He can't do one subhanallah. He can't make one cent of charitable work. Nothing he can do. Everything has been blocked off. At that time, what is going to be the genuine concern will be right. That time what is going to be the genuine desire will be obviously right. Because now his books have been closed off and he can see beyond death. He sees the result of his action. When he sees the result of the action, so he's seeing one subhanAllah what is bringing to him. One alhamdulillah what it has brought to him. One astaghfirullah what it has done for him. He can see it now. Before everything was closed off. And now everything is opened out. That is why our Buzuganadin say, by don't pay attention to dreams and to spiritual experiences. Because after death, everything will be spiritual. After death, everything will be spiritual. You'll be able to see everything, right? But what you won't be able to achieve after death is that subhanAllah, alhamdulillah, you can't do it. So, you must do now what you can't do after death. Otherwise, now you'll start wondering what happens after death. I'm going to see what goes on there. And after death, you want to come back. When you are here, you want to be that side. When you are that side, you want to be here. See, shaitan's house, shaitan plays with you. Shaitan plays in very mysterious ways. A student in the madrasa, he'll hear on bayan, hey, how great it is to go in jihad, you know. Hey, jihad and all that. In jihad, then he was doing some fazail ilm, the virtues of knowledge, how good it is to be a student. So whilst he's here, then he's thinking of jihad. Whilst in jihad, he's thinking of the madrasa. So you not balance, you not focus in anything that you are doing. Now this is the play of shaitan, the trick of shaitan, that he doesn't allow you to do what you need to be doing. You are here, you heard on bayan, a person went for 4 months, you know. In that 4 months, so many people became Muslim. Hey, I'm stuck here in the madrasa, I can't do this. Opportunities are just going. I can't get anything. And whilst you're in Jamaat now, you say, hey, you know those people, they even taught them Surah Fatiha, they taught them Iman. The basics of Deen, they are teaching them at the madrasa. I'm losing out. I'm here in 4 months here, I'm just going for Gash and all that. What are we getting out of it? Here, they bring so many people. So many people, they're teaching them, they're getting the Iman right, the Aqaid right, the beliefs right. What we are doing? So whilst you are here, then you think of Jamaat. Whilst you're in Jamaat, then you think of madrasa. But you see the play of shaitan. So the right thing is by just focus on what you are doing. And you can be focused when you got someone to guide you. But you don't have someone to guide you, then you being a toy of shaitan. Shaitan is just toying around with you. He's toying, bringing you this side and pushing you that side. He's not allowing you to have that focus so that you can progress. Al-Mu'tamid Sa'd ibn Umar says, that one person is going through a spiritual state. You see. In life, you will go through different phases. Right? When you were 10, 11 years of age, then you went through some physical change, right? You know more like when you were 2 years. Now, 10, 11 years, you think you are different. You don't want to be treated like a 2-year-old child, right? But then when you're 15 years of age, then you're going through a big change, massive change, biological change. Your feelings are different, your perception is different, your emotions are different, and you want to vent your feelings. Now the importance of you having someone to guide you at every phase, to let you know by that you're going through this change, and this is what you're supposed to be doing, this is how you need to guide yourself. But you don't have anybody to guide you at that time, then what are you going to do? You'll just do what your mind is telling you. And what your mind tells you doesn't have to be the right. It can be guiding you to the wrong. Or it can take you on a long cut, on a very long run. Eventually you will come, but after a long, long ride. So the right thing is, by someone that has experienced it, he went through the whole process, he went through the whole exercise, go and ask him, what do I do in this situation? It's a circumstance that I'm trapped in, but what do I do? Hazrat says, in his zamana, there was one pious person. And that pious person was instructing other people in piety. He was also like a Sufi, and he was instructing, teaching others. But then the need is that you need someone above you. Until you are not fully settled and matured. See, in this path of righteousness, it takes time to come to climax, to come right to the top. You can't say I gave 10 years, 20 years now, I am climaxed already. Now that depends upon the individual, what's the level of commitment. A lot of people come here and they ask, you know, my child, I'm going to admit him for his, how long will it take? So I can't guarantee you. It depends on two things. One is, what is the capability of the child? And number two is, what commitment he's giving. Capability is good and he's giving a very good commitment. 6 months is also too much. But the capability is there and he's not giving a commitment. Or he's giving commitment but he doesn't have a capability. So I can't guarantee. How can I guarantee that, you know, he will complete this task within this period? How can I guarantee that? So the capability must be there and the commitment must be there. Abu Buzughan Adin said there are three different classes of people. One is Kamil, man that is complete. Number two is Naqis, person that is deficient. And number three is a non-entity, Kal Adam, like he doesn't exist. The one that is non-existent, is a non-entity, is he doesn't have the brain himself, but he doesn't consult with anybody as well. He knows that he is deficient, right? I don't know it well. But he doesn't want to admit that I don't know it. You know, when there was that accident when Ismail was involved some years back. So the paramedic took, I think, about 2 hours to come in. Right? And South Africa was hosting the World Cup at that time. But they don't have a paramedic for their own people. Own Bantus, they don't have paramedics. For a small thing like that, and it took them 2-3 hours just to get the paramedic to the site. Right? Now, they got a professional person and an apprentice. He's working. He's supposed to be taking instruction. So he's telling the professional person, I think you must do it as... Now, the person is about dying that side. He's saying, I think you will try it. You forget all your stories. You just do what I say. At that time, what is he going to do? He's not going to take a chance. He's not going to speculate at that time. So, no, what you're saying is right. I think we should do it. By that time, he's going to try and use some diplomacy. This man will die. So you have to just do it. Later I'll explain to you. When we are relaxed, then I'll explain to you why I did this. But now you just follow instructions. So one is a person that is a non-entity. He doesn't know the stuff. And he doesn't want to accept as well. If you see in the world today, same thing is coming out. Everywhere. Nearly everywhere in the whole world. In whatever positions people are in, they don't have the brain, but they won't consult as well. Then you get a second person who's got a brain, but he will not consult. He's understanding, right? He can think, he can reason, he can rationalize, but he will not consult. And I know it all, I don't need to know, I don't need to anybody come and ask, show me. So one person learned a little bit of Arabic, He says, no. I know all the masalas, everything I know it. Nobody can touch me. Why? Because I learned Arabic. So now that I learned Arabic, I know everything. Everything. I'm so versatile, I'm so good, that I know everything. So one person thought, I must try and make him understand what it means by knowing everything. Hamadani. Hamadani ka dawa karna, insan ke liye bilkul sahi nahi. You can't make claim that I know everything. So he comes up to this man here who claims that I know everything. He says, you know what, I want to hang a door. How do you go about doing it? He said, what do you think? I'm a carpenter. He said, no, but you know, I thought that someone learns Arabic, he knows everything. So this is why I come to you. So Allah Pak has created such that different avenues, then you need to understand that I know this game here. That doesn't qualify me to know something else. If I know English very well, that doesn't make me a professor of deen. Deen is a different subject. For that, you need to have certain qualifications, certain level of understanding. You have to have the professional guidance of your seniors. Eventually, you get that level and matured understanding. But you haven't gone through the processes, and immediately you want to say, no, I learned Arabic, I learned English, so I know everything. That's wrong. It's incorrect. Even to interpret something, you need someone that is qualified. If it's something to do with medicine, then you need to have someone who knows, who specializes in medicine, to interpret what they are talking about. You can't say, I know English, so I know this thing here. Otherwise, you go to court, right? And you tell them, all right, section so and so, this is the law, and I'm quoting this. So they will ask you, and who interpreted this? So no, I know English, so I interpret it. What they'll tell you? So it must be someone that we recognize. He must interpret it. Who we recognize is someone in the senior council, someone in some old advocate. This is the person that we will recognize. He must interpret the law. He interprets the law, we will recognize it. But a person like you, you cannot say that you can interpret the law. Your interpretation is flawed. They will tell you straight. So he was a pious person himself and in teaching others also. But now you have a level of maturity. See, you have a level of maturity, and until you are not fully matured, then you cannot claim to be there. Now this is what happens, see, when you're not matured and then you want to claim. Allah Pak doesn't like that. And this type of mistakes are across the board, right throughout. Whether it is in deen, whether it is in dunya, but you get that class of people that are not matured, but they want to be recognized. One person got into the mood of ibadat. He's getting up for tahajjud and all that. And people are respecting him for his piety and his righteousness. Now he's getting up for tahajjud and daily, but no instruction. People are showing him respect that he's very regular in his tahajjud, in his recitation of the Quran, zikr, etc. So he's a very pious person. One person said, but he doesn't have a guide. He doesn't have anybody instructing him and teaching him. So how can you rely on such a person's piety? You don't know where he's going to take a turn. Where his mind or where shaitan will just manipulate him, you don't know. He will just manipulate him, he will maneuver him however he wants. So they began to shout this person, saying, you know, such a pious person, a buzrug of our time, you know, we're getting barakat in this place here because of his duas, and you got no respect, no adab for him. Watch out, Allah Pak's azab will come to you. So he laughed and said, that person doesn't have a guide, doesn't have knowledge, doesn't have a guide, so he can't be right. Anyway, carried on. Now this person, now just to teach his people what he did. Now he knows this person here that is becoming a little bit pious. He gets up at about 2 o'clock in the morning and he starts off all his tahajjud and zikr and namaz, all that. So precisely around the time he got up, so you're talking of India, old days. So he climbed up the roof and he started knocking. Right at the time that this person is engaged in tahajjud, so he started knocking. So this person become attentive now. So there's a knock. So long I'm in ibadat, 10 years I'm in ibadat. And first day I'm getting a knock on the roof. It's an acceptance, you know. So he says, I'm announcing my arrival. I just came from Allah Pak. I'm Jibreel. You know, he made his voice a little bit, very much sounding very authoritative, you know. And he became even more attentive now. See, my ibadat now, Allah Pak is recognizing my ibadat. I have come to that position that Allah Pak is sending Jibreel, the one that used to be sent to Anbiya. Now Allah Pak is sending that person to me. So what a maqam I have reached now. What a position I have. So this is very, very attentive. See, your Rabb has given salams to you. Number one. Hey, so he doesn't know what to say now. Saying, wa alaykum as-salam. Can't say Allah wa alaykum as-salam. But doesn't know what to say. So then he says to him, you know what? Allah Pak says that now you are advanced old age. You last 10, 15 years and you put yourself, you exerted yourself in ibadat. Now you're old now, you're over 70 now. So we're pensioning you off, you see. Now, from now onwards, everything that was for us, you know, all the namaz, everything is maft. Because there must be an age where we pension you off, where we retire you. Don't you see the system of the world? You come to a certain age, everything, you get retired, you get pensioned off. So we pensioned you off, we retired you completely. Now he's very excited. He said, now, Assalamu alaikum, I'm returning back to the sky. He's gone. Now, the coming day, people are used to this man coming to the masjid at least about 40 minutes before time. The further time, the azan goes early as well. And he's there before the muazzin also comes to the masjid, he's there. Now they see that Fajr time, azan is gone, Chacha hasn't come yet. Everybody's looking, you know how it happens in the masjid? What happened? Chacha used to be in the first line. I don't see him. Next man is pulling in. I don't see him. Third man is coming in. I don't see him. Now after Fajr namaz, they're discussing how to do morning mashwara. What to do? Because it's a serious matter. We don't see the buzuruk of our town. What happened? You know, we can't just leave it like this. The buzuruk of our town, we don't know. Maybe he died or something happened to him. We must go and assist him. So the whole Jamaat went in. Knocked at the door now. He's not responding because he's thinking to himself that I'm of a very high maqam now. I'm above the rest of the creation. I am receiving the same type of spiritual experience that the Anbiya get. I am at a different level, complete. I am above the rest. Not realizing that the Anbiya, whatever they were, whatever level they had reached, but they hadn't missed out a single namaz. So he can't reason. He's bloated with that pride, that arrogance. His mind is gone off. Thrown, he's thrown off, blown away. Now they come in, they knock and they knock. Eventually, after about half an hour or so, he opened the door. He's sitting down and as though he's meditating. And he's really, really puffed with that pride and that arrogance of his. They don't know how to start off the communication. And eventually, after half an hour, one person started off. I said, how do you do? Now, he picked up his head and says, I'm at a different level now. Everything is marked for me. You know, what a spiritual experience I had. Jibreel came at 2 o'clock. And he knocked at my roof. And this is the message he gave from Allah Ta'ala. So you can just go now. I'm at a different level. Now that person that was saying, by jahil ka kya atibar, the person that is a jahil, ignorant, you can't trust him. He doesn't have a guide, doesn't know this thing here. Anybody can maneuver him, anybody can manipulate him. How is he going to differentiate that this is from Allah Ta'ala? This is not from Allah Ta'ala. But he doesn't have the experience, he doesn't have the knowledge, he doesn't have anybody guiding him. Then how is he going to know? How is he going to differentiate? The importance of having a guide. This is Mawlana Rumi Rahmatullah's kitab, Masnavi. There's about 3 subjects that he discusses. The one is the importance of a sheikh. At any given time, I don't think yourself to be independent. Now we read some kitab on tasawuf, some kitab on righteousness. So we said, no, I'm at that level. See, there's some similarities. He saw this dream, I saw this dream. This experience, he went through, I went through the experience. So we're at the same level now. We're knocking even. My sheikh is below me now. Before, well, he started me off. Now I'm flying. And then you'll have one story to support what you're saying. The sheikh also says, sometimes it can happen that the person that's below you, the one that you are training up, he can fly up and you can be still at the ground. The example that they give to illustrate, Marum Rahma gives, is one eagle mistakenly left its egg somewhere down, and one water duck also left its egg down. That thing got mixed up with the fowls, with the hen's eggs. So that thing is sitting upon eggs. One is an eagle's egg, One is a water duck's egg. The other thing is sitting upon that egg. When that thing is hatched out and it's growing, so the eagle, the chicken that is grown up now, now that thing is going so high, it's challenging the clouds, going so high. See? Now the hen is looking in regrets and remorseful. Meto phir zameen pe, aur dekho mera bachcha, kahan se kahan pahunch gaya. I'm still scratching the earth and see where this child of mine, where he's gone. And see the other child of mine, that one that is going from gliding, just gliding from one end of the ocean to the other end. And I'm just scratching the surface. So now this person is reasoning in himself, okay, see, sometimes I can excel the sheikh also. Like how the Mullah Rumi is saying, that same egg that was under the hen, and kahan se kahan tak pahunch gaya. So you read this kitab with spiritualism and then whatever, and you see one little similarity and you say, no, I'm gone. I'm above the rest. They don't know where I am now. I am gone very high. So I can't be relating to them. So Mullah Rumi rahmatullah alayhi, his whole emphasis on this, by understand this, the importance of a sheikh. And the sheikh needs to be very, very well grounded. Very well grounded. He needs to be very mature, understanding of the person's situation, halat, understanding it very well, conversant. That is why Muhyiddin ibn Arabi rahmatullah alayhi says that the sheikh needs to have these type of qualifications. One is this, that he needs to administer things like how a ruler will administer, a king, how he administers. 10 things can happen at the same time, but he has not lost his composure. He's calm, he's controlled, and he can manage all those affairs. 10-20 things are happening at the same time, but he hasn't lost his composure. How are you going to run things? So the sheikh, one thing he needs to have is he needs to have composure, control, command over the situation at any given time. But I must be in control, I must be composed, I must be well calm. As Aziz Muhammad used to explain this, he says, one person, I'll come back to the story again, inshallah. One person says that I met about 500 awliya-i-kiram, right? And I asked them, all five, I asked them same questions. What I asked the one, I asked the second and the third and the fourth. That 500 awliya, I asked all the same question. And all the answers were identical. So the one question I asked, hoshyar aadmi kya hai, kon hai? Hosh means senses, yar is person, right? So the person that is in his senses, who is that person? Hoshyar, we say hoshyar, hoshyar, intelligent, right? So who is that intelligent person? So they all answered, that person that can maintain his calm under any circumstance, but he doesn't become emotional, he doesn't lose it, he doesn't flick, he doesn't flip, he doesn't slip. He can maintain that calmness at any given time, but he must maintain that calmness, and that is a person of intelligence. And to support this, he gives an incident. He says that the royal elephant, it broke out into the open. So there was a royal proclamation, okay, everybody must get into the homes and they must close the main gates. Now everything is closed because the elephant is broken loose. In the meanwhile, there was a small child, 6-7-year-old child. That child got left. Now nobody can go out to reach for the child because they're frightened for their lives. But they also worried, now what's going to happen to this child? Anyway, face to face with the child, the elephant is with the child, right? At that moment, the child saw a small pup around there. So he took that pup by the tail and he swirled it like that. And he flung it right onto the snout of the elephant. Now, these animals, when they see something that is totally different, they're not used to, they get into a fright. As huge the mass can be, but something that is totally different, they're not used to, they get into a panic. That elephant got into a panic, took a U-turn and gone back. Hazrat Rahmatullah draws a conclusion. He says, see, the small child, he maintained his composure and calmness, right? He couldn't control that situation. And that big mess, as big as it was, it lost its composure and it lost everything. It couldn't control itself with the big mess that it was. 10 tons, right? And this child here, how much? You say 15 kilos, 20 kilos, right? Nothing more than that. But he controlled that whole situation when he was totally calm and composed. You see this hoshiyar. At any given time, by hosh ko sambhalo, control yourself, calm, calm. And this can happen when the heart has got no ulterior motives. Now you've got an ulterior motive, you've got something else in your heart, this person must do this, and that thing must work out like that. And it didn't work out like how you had planned and envisaged. Now you feel totally betrayed. You know, I planned it like this, and expected this will happen like this. And this person at the 11th hour, he just let me down. But who asked you to have that hopes and expectations in people? So we're coming back to the story. You know, this person, now he's pious now. And in that piety of his, a certain thought passed his mind. The thought that passed his mind, that I am shaitan. You know, because I'm getting all evil whispers. Now you get this. Every person gets some whispers. One is you get a whisper, one you call it a waswasa. A whisper will generally be something to do with the deen, you know, some doubts in deen. Generally that comes from shaitan. He tries to instill some doubts pertaining to deen. And then you get stray thoughts. Stray thoughts is a different thing. And now you're saying, hey, today I made 1,000 rand, tomorrow let's hope I get another 10,000 rand. So that is not to directly relate to your deen. But there can be some things that are directly related to your deen. For example, now you're thinking, hey, why is 5-time namaz? Why can't we make it just 3-time namaz? So that's related to your deen. Now that's a whisper, and it's a waswasa from shaitan. This thing is something else, it's material. Right? It's your nature, man wants more, greed, etc. So your mind will go on to different things. Right? In namaz, you think of something, I need to go and buy, I need to go and do my buying, my groceries for the day. So that's a stray thought, and this is a whisper. Two different things, right? And the ilaj, the cure for both is, you don't pay attention to it. Don't take it seriously. Whether it's a whisper, whether it's a stray thought, all you need to do is just engage yourself in your work. You're going to have these whispers and you're going to have the stray thoughts, but you get into your work. When you have accustomed yourself, you have trained yourself into focusing to your work, right? Then the worst type of thought will pass your mind, but you know what, my work is just to concentrate on my work. I mustn't allow myself to be attracted to these things. So you just do two things. One is, don't pay attention to it. Number two is, just get yourself engaged in something that will lead you to Allah Ta'ala. In any thought that will lead you to Allah Ta'ala. And the ayah for that is, إِنَّ الَّذِينَ اتَّقَوْا إِذَا مَسَّهُمْ طَائِفٌ مِّنَ الشَّيْطَانِ تَذَكَّرُوا. When they are touched by shaitan, what they do? They get into remembrance. And the word that the Quran Sharif is using is tadhakkaru. In other words, they get into remembrance. Remembrance can mean anything that will lead you eventually to akhirat, to Allah Ta'ala, to Jannah, to Jahannam, to the right cause. Right? You engage your thought now, qabr for example. Right? You're getting into a wrong thought, you think of qabr now, what happens? Alright, you're thinking of a girl now, hey, I'll do this and I'll do this, right? And immediately you make tasawwur, not tasawwur a sheikh, tasawwur a ab. Make tasawwur, imagine that's your father there. And he's cheeky and he's looking with open big eyes. Yeah. What are you doing here? What are you doing? What will happen to those feelings? That feelings will just get smashed down, isn't it? If you think of your father at that time, especially if your father is dead now, and you think of him now as you're standing and you're getting caught up with all these type of thoughts, what are you doing here? What business you got to do here? So that thoughts will just break down, provided you think seriously about something. Anything that will just turn you away from this thought. Or, for example, you thought for that moment, right, your janaza is lying down, right? And they're taking your janaza, and they're lowering you in the grave. And they're about to just put the planks down, you know, that you won't see anybody for the rest of time. The next meeting will be the morning of Qiyamah. That's the time that you'll meet again. Now, you thought now very seriously. What will happen to those thoughts? They'll just get smashed down. So you don't have to make zikr like how we think it's zikr. Zikr can refer any thought that will distract you from this. complete distraction. Any thought that will move you away. Any thought. But it's a halal thought, permissible thought, but it must just turn you away from this. One youngster, not youngster, he's quite old now, he's about 50 years of age. So he had taluk with Mawla Yunus Sahib, rahmatullahi alayhi. Mawla Yunus Sahib passed away, so he got taluk with some other sheikh. Be it as it may, now, he came one day, he said, I don't know what to do. I said, I was going to, whoever is your sheikh, and I must talk to him. So I'm feeling very embarrassed, but. Now, I knew him. For some time I knew him, because he's from, he was from Spingo, now he's living elsewhere. See, well, Spingo you start off, then you grow, then you go to Overport. And from Overport, then you go to Musgrave, then Amslanga, then Balito. But they start off here from Spingo, you see. So now, he's at a different level now. For a big business, thriving. In the meanwhile, he's about, at that time he was about 45, 46, now he's about 50 now. So he says that area that I am in, of course it's like a up market, you know, area. So there's quite a few whites that are living there. And now that I got a big business, I come in with an expensive car, so people are attracted to me, to my business, whatever. Now in that one white girl, I am at 46 now, and this girl is about 17, 18, and she's attracted to me. But he had good features, you know. But at the age of 45, 46, although he's a chacha, but his features are still attractive. So, you know, I don't know what to do now. The way she's SMSing, you know, babe and all the type of words they're using, you know. I mean, chacha, what the chacha has got now left to be a baby, you know. Anyway, she's SMSing him now. He's thinking, you know, he's like that, he's so handsome. So because of his handsomeness, and then she's getting attracted to him and all that. I said, my chacha, forget all the stories. It's not you handsome, it's your money. It's not at all you handsome. Now, how must I get her off? I got a wife, I got 4 or 5 children I got. I said, you ever experiment with this, your wife will leave you. Your father-in-law has put in some wealth for you. He'll take all that away. Everything will be lost. It's the end of your life, end of your chapter. Don't you show interest. But how must I close this? So I said, the easy way to close this, very easy way to close it, is with that SMS you swear. You don't use swear words normally, but now this is an exception to the case you swear. The baddest, the worst thing you can swear, you swear. Right? And at the end you write there, you know what, now my business is going on a liquidation, everything is gone, the family has taken everything away. And for the next month, you will drive in with your old car, that old Skoda, see what's going to be her response. You just SMS her, and you write this, you know, everything, during the liquidation, my father-in-law pulled everything away, and you come in, not only at Merck now, you come into this car. Every love that she had, everything was wiped out. Clean, dry clean, complete. So there's a different way, you see, to get this thought off the track, there's a different way. She will never think of him because of the bad words, the swear words, the vulgar languages he used. So you think she'll ever get interested in this person. That thing is gone, finished. It's flushed out and flushed out very well, complete, out of the system. So normally we would say, don't swear, don't use vulgar languages, whatever. But in the jihad, what are you going to do? Tell me, in jihad, you say, oh, sir, how are you? Can I shoot you down? You're not going to use that approach? Are you going to use that approach? So this is a jihad now. This is a jihad. That's your jihad at that time. How are you going to eliminate that enemy of your mind? You're going to eliminate it and eliminate it for good. Because you're going to use a small thing. You're going to use a toy rifle. It's not going to work. They'll come again. They'll make other approaches. But now you finished her and you finished complete. She'll never think of coming back on that line. So this is one way to repulse this evil thoughts, to engage in some thought. One is, like I said, it's your janaza. Your janaza there, and there is waiting now. There is wanting to lower it down, and for the planks to be covering you, and the next mulaqat with your friends is the morning of Qiyamah. Just think that, just think very deeply. If you want, you can close your eyes, but just think very seriously on that, and see what happens to those thoughts. Those thoughts will just vanish. The third thing you need to do is, then don't keep yourself idle. As Mawlana Thamizi Sahib used to say, that one Buzurg was passing by, one person, right? And that person was idle. So he didn't greet him. And then he finished his work and he came past the same road. So as he saw that person now he greeted him. So his attendant, his khadim, asked, "Brother, when you went, then you didn't greet him. On your return, why did you greet him?" He says, "Didn't you see on the return he was busy? He was digging something, whatever he was doing, but he was engaged. When we were passing by, he was idle." So that's the devil's workshop. Shaitan was active with him at that time. But when he kept himself engaged, now Shaitan had no chance to work with him. See? So a man is occupied, doing something, whatever it is. Even you are planting potatoes in your garden, I feel that's much better than just playing with a computer game or just playing with your phone. There you're going to be distracted. Here, your mind will be occupied. You will be productive. At least you can have some chips for the day. Or someone else can be, you can feed someone else. But now you allowing yourself to be lured by the shaitan through your phone or through remaining idle. And then you want to know, why am I getting these stray thoughts? Is that fear of yours? You keep yourself occupied. Whatever it is, but keep yourself occupied. Don't ever keep yourself idle. No matter what you are, but don't keep yourself idle. As Umar radiallahu anhu used to say, to the extent, I don't want to see anybody idle. You either keep yourself, priority is you keep yourself engaged in deen. But for some reason, you can't keep yourself always occupied in deen, then at least occupy yourself in the dunya respect. In the dunya respect, keep yourself occupied. Even if you can't keep yourself occupied in deen, keep yourself occupied in the dunya respect, not in a wrong environment, or in an environment, the surrounding that is not right, is not conducive for your deen. Permissible environment, but it's not going to be damaging to your deen. But keep yourself occupied. At least you will shut and seal off the doors of shaitan. But now na deen ka, na dunya ka, you're not engaged in anything deeni, you're not engaged in anything dunya, then you're going to be the devil's workshop, obviously. So we're coming back to the story with this buzurg now. He's got this thought that I am a shaitan. But perhaps that evil thoughts were storming his mind. They piled up his mind. And because of evil stray thoughts piling up his mind, he's thinking to himself, you know, so many years of ibadah that I did, and I am still a target, I'm still a victim to these evil thoughts. So that means all my ibadah, everything is gone to waste. Now he's making the calculation himself. See, the need to have someone to guide you at every step. When you can't meet the person all the time, at least once a week, once in 2 weeks, once in 3 weeks, once in a month, but visit, keep the contact, keep the relationship. Now you don't keep the relationship and those thoughts are coming past your mind and then you want to make your own decisions. What happens? That you're allowing shaitan to overwhelm you. You're allowing shaitan to take a decision, make judgment against you. So now you've nothing, you know, you're 20 years now and you've been worshipping Allah Ta'ala, now you're being stormed with all these type of doubts and thoughts. So that means everything is wasted. Shaitan is going to work on you. How easy it is for he to work against you. So when you got someone above now, the system of Allah Ta'ala is when you got someone, then Allah Ta'ala protects you. Because He wants you to be aligning to someone. He doesn't want you to be acting independently. He wants you to be aligning to someone, not to be acting independently. You've got nobody, you haven't aligned yourself to anybody. And obviously now Shaitan, he's got the chance to, or that opportunity, to overwhelm you, to smash you down. See, like a classroom, if there's a teacher, there's control, isn't it? But there's no teacher then. For some moments, you will carry on, and I need to do my work. After that, the teacher is not around, I can come my time, I can leave my time, nobody's around to check if I'm here, I'm not around. See? So won't the Shaitan and won't the surrounding have the better of you? So that presence of the teacher, although you may not be very pious, but that is a defense for yourself. So the sheikh also is a defense. He's around, so he's a defense. The teacher is a defense. Don't you see it happening in a class? Small children, and once the teacher is there, there's total discipline. You can hear a pin drop. So the sheikh is like that. When you're holding him in respect, so he's your defense. He's your fort. And when you don't have that, now that defense, your guard is dropped. And you've got nothing now to hold you back, to restrain you, to block you. You've got nothing. In Saharanpur, there was one jalsa, you know. So the jalsa just ended. Big crowd. Time of the Shaykh, I'm saying, all his Buzurgaan Adin, one of Qayyil Ahmad Sahib, rahmatullahi. the big jalsa carrying on, like how they have at the year end, and the jalsa ended. So people now, they are going back home, boarded the trains and going back. One youngster is going towards Punjab. And beside him is a yogi, you know. He's got that zafran cloth, etc. And he's beside him. And that yogi now, he just meditated. And suddenly he says, you know, I'm seeing it's 11 o'clock in the day. Everything is total dark. I can't see a thing. I can't see my hand. And this total darkness. And my heart is telling me, go towards Hinduism. It's the day. I'm looking at the time again. It's 10, 11 o'clock in the day. Everything is it's supposed to be bright, but I'm seeing total darkness, and my heart is going in the other direction. Now what do I do? Now my sheikh is not around, what do I do? So at that moment, what he did was, he thought of his sheikh at that moment. Mawlana Sahanpuri Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh, because he couldn't go now, he's on the train. He just thought of him. Thought of the thinking of good people. Just the thought of, like I say, you think of your father, right? So doesn't it block off a lot of things? So then if you can think of your father and can guide you, can bring you right, if you think of a sahabi, won't it guide you? If you think of a righteous person, won't it guide you? Won't it be an inspiration? You will not say that he inspired. It was because of the blessings of a good person, the thought of a good person. Like when you think of good person, there are mercies that are descending. If you think of shaitan, etc., then there is curses that are coming down. But you think of good people, righteous people, and there are mercies that are descending. So he just thought of his Shaykh Mawlana Sahanpuri Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh, and he just thought about him and some of his teachings, you know. He's there as though, and he's teaching me. This is how you read namaz, this is how you make zikr, as though he's there and he's teaching me. And the moment I had to do this, everything finished. It's totally bright, I can see everything, light is covering the whole place. So this yogi that was doing that yogism, he got up, he put his head up like this, and then he asked, who's your sheikh? Straight, there's no relationship, but he asked, who's your sheikh? Mawlana Sahib says, Bara tagra sheikh, he's a very strong sheikh. So at that time, this thing helps you. See, this connection, this link, this association, I don't say it must be done as a routine practice, but you quarrel sometimes, and how do you escape? When you quarrel from all sides, and this type of evil thoughts are overwhelming, then this one way to get out of it, to exit from this, is to think like this. So we're talking about this person here, and he's going on to the path of piety, but he's doing himself. You know, they got these do-it-yourself books, you know. So you think now it's like so simple, do-it-yourself. This also I can do it myself. By a small carpenter also, he can't become a skilled carpenter without someone above him. Businessman, you need someone above. Any profession for that matter, you need someone above you. Allah Pak has made the system like that, that you need someone above you to become the skilled and talented person. So then why do you say that deen, you don't need to have that skill, you don't need to have anybody above you. You do that because you don't want yourself to be supervised. Like a child that doesn't want to learn under the ustad, what he's saying? He says, I don't want to be supervised, I want to have my freedom. I can learn when I want to, I can play around when I want to, I can do my own thing. It'll take him 20 years, but he will not complete that. Against a child that is supervised, he's being monitored, so you won't see the child just going off in a hurry. See the supervision. And supervised and unsupervised, what difference it makes. Now he's got this thought that he's shaitan, and that thing, that thought is overwhelming, and it's overwhelming, and he doesn't know what to do. He's resisting it for a day, for a week, for a month. Meanwhile now, he's tajud, guzar, everything he's doing, but this thought is overwhelming him that I am shaitan. And in the meanwhile, he feels too embarrassed to go and refer to someone. Al-Mu'ad Thanvi Sahib Rahman says, even if you don't have a sheikh and you don't find a person that is competent enough, in other words, you yourself is like a buzrug, right? And you don't have a person that is competent enough to guide you, then too you shouldn't be independent. You should have some friends at least that you make mashwara with them. You don't have to listen to them, but you should be making mashwara with them as well. Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, with all the greatness, all the virtue and all the excellence, but he still consulted the Sahaba Ikram. Don't you see, in small matters, in bigger matters, but you see Nabi Sam distancing himself from consultation. He's consulting the Sahaba Ikram. Uhud, and some Sahaba Ikram are saying do it at Medina, and some saying go out of Medina, Munawara. Nabi Sam himself feels we should be doing it in Medina, but the majority of the Sahaba Ikram, the youngsters, saying let's go out of Medina, Munawara, and Nabi Sam gives in to their suggestion. But he's also subjecting himself to consultation. Then what do we think of ourselves? That we are above Nabi Sam. That when he's subjecting himself to consultation, right, then he's giving us a lesson. It's a precedent by I am your Nabi, I am your Rasul, I am divinely inspired all the time, right? And I give myself to consultation. How much more do you need to consult? So one is a person that is a learner, he's still coming up. He needs someone professional to be above him. But one is now the person that is already up, and you can see the others are not at that level. Right? Or they are just almost there, either right there, or they are less than him, right? Because of him knowing the field, right? So he also mustn't free himself and recluse himself from consultation. He must also consult. Though he doesn't have to go with their decision, but he must consult. Subject yourself to that consultation. Small things and big things. And consultation doesn't mean, I'm going now. It's alright, yeah, go. I'm making the zikr, alright. What zikr must I do? I got so much of time, I want to do something. You know my halat, you know my conditions, and what is the better thing for me? It's a different thing to say, and it's a different thing to inform. One is you informing, and one is you requesting. One person came to Thanabon, so he stayed for 3-4 days. And then after 3-4 days, he got all his baggages, everything prepared, and came to Hazrat, mujhe jaane ki ijazat chahiye. I'm requesting permission to leave. So Hazrat asked him, bhai, are you requesting permission or are you informing? If you are requesting permission, before you could have tied up your parcels, you would have asked for permission. I have everything ready, packed up, and then you just come to inform me. Informing is different, and requesting is different. Two different things. So anyway, this person says to his khadim that I am shaitan now, you see. So I'm going to confirm this with that alim. He's an alim, he's in the masjid. He teaches some things, or whatever he teaches, so I'm going to him. He went up to that alim and he said, I'm shaitan. So he said, if you are shaitan, la hawla wa la quwwata illa billah, get away from me then. Now he comes back to his khadim and said, now that alim is also confirmed that I'm shaitan. I am shaitan. So this alim that I went to in the masjid, he also confirmed that I am shaitan. So what's the point of me continuing with life? I am a wreck. I'm going to wreck other people's life as well just now. So I rather cleanse the earth, purify the earth from my filth. So what's the need of me living now? So he went back to his apartment, he took out a nice dagger, sharpened it nicely, and he said, see, I'm making zaba of myself, Bismillah, Allahu Akbar. I'm making zaba of myself. And isme kuch kami reh jaye, tu us kasar ko pura kar dena. You know, if one vein, you know, when you're cutting, you have to cut 3 veins, you see. So if one of the veins are not cut, then you may just sever that vein, you see. So anyway, he comes back and he cuts himself, and he told the khadim, so the khadim, jo kuch kasar reh gaya, whatever was left, he completed it. In the meanwhile, it became a judicial thing, and at the court, it's ruled out, okay, you killed him. So no, bhai, what's the point in me living after my sheikh is gone? There's no point in me, there's no enjoyment, there's no excitement, but this is what happened exactly. He went to this masjid, and he went and spoke to this alim, and this is what the alim said, and this is what he instructed me to do. But otherwise, for me to leave the world, I'm very, very comfortable with it. I want to go and meet up. So there's nothing better for me than dying as a shaheed. Anyway, Maulana Muhammad Yaqub Sahib, there was a very senior person in the same field. So this whole case went up to him. Okay, this is what happened. This was the sequence of the event. And this is what happened eventually. As Maulana Yaqub Sahib said, see, the right thing, this alim that said whatever he said wasn't the right thing. Yes, I do believe that he's a knowledgeable person, but he doesn't specialize in this field. This is a different field altogether. What he specialized for was different, and this is a different field altogether. Although he's righteous, he's pious, but this field here is totally different. He doesn't know it. Now this relates to understanding some aspect of psychology, and how the brain works. In that state, now how does the brain work to understand that? So Mawlana asked him, but alright, if you were there, then how you would have reacted to this? How would you have responded to this? So I would have responded in this manner. I would have told him, Ji, when he said, I am shaitan, main shaitan ho gaya hun, I would have responded like this, ke shaitan bhi to usi ka hai. Shaitan bhi to usi ka hai. Shaitan also belongs to the beloved. See now, in the Saudi we talk a lot of love of Allah Ta'ala, right? So now, just to digress his mind a little bit, we'll see, shaitan bhi to usi ka hai. Shaitan also belongs to the beloved. Although the relationship of shaitan with Allah Ta'ala is a relationship of enmity, is a relationship of hatred. In the shaitan alakum aduun, right? Fattakhidu aduwa is a relationship of enmity, right? But at that time when he's in that state of mind, then his mind will not go to this. His mind will take him to the point that I'm driving him to this point. They say, oh, shaitan bhi usi ka hai, well, shaitan also belongs to him. So that would have just comforted him for the moment. Then when it comforted him, it will bring him to normal. When it brings him to normal, then I will just maneuver him gracefully, I'll bring him to the right again. Now this person was an alim, but he didn't know how to handle this situation. When he didn't know how to handle this situation, now it results in the loss of a life. Firstly, it was his mistake that he had to have someone to guide him. And he didn't take the pains to guide, to have a guide. Number two, then, it was the wrong thing for this person to make this type of a judgment against him. La hawla wa la quwwata illa shaitan, get out of here. That was the wrong thing. Because he didn't know what state this person was going through. And he just passed judgment against him. So you see this part here, and the different phases, the different conditions that you can go through. And this is not restricted only to tasawwuf, but in other departments of life as well, you can go through different type of mental phases. And in those phases, you need someone to guide you, someone to make you understand. One youngster was telling me that he lost his brother, right? So his mother had gone, no, he's lost his brother, so his mother had gone to a state of depression. Serious state of depression. So anyway, the father had accompanied them to Jalalabad to Hazrat Maulana Masihullah Sahib Rahmatullah Ali. And Hazrat was informed that this is the state that the mother is going through. So anyway, Hazrat understood the condition, the situation, and the mother is in a serious state of depression. So all Hazrat asked, ke tumhare kitne bachche hai? Mera to teen bachche hai. Hazrat ji asked the woman, ke how many children do you have? How many children do you have? See the emphasis. How many children do you have? I have 3 children. But Hazrat ji said to her, ask just that one question, and that whole depression just went away. Now that mind went off, you know, I lost one child. So that mind is off her mind. I have 3 children. Hey, others don't have, someone don't have any children. Someone have 1 child. Someone have 2. I got 3 sons. And 2 daughters I've got. So the mind was just a need to shift the mind on to a different tangent altogether. And as the mind was just turned to a different tangent, just came under control again. Now you see the importance of having someone above you. Someone to have above. Allah has designed the system. Don't be independent. A small little home, you've got a head of the house. The house is running well. If there's no head of the house, then there's chaos in the house. There's no father, there's no figure, there's no leadership in the house. What's going to happen? Allah Pak Tawfiq Naseeb.